Channel Radio.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Business Bunker Show here on Channel Radio in association with Biz Radio. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the stonkingly gorgeous Jill Serkin.
Oh, if only they could listen to the pre-show rants, Paul Andrews.
I'm really rude to her before we come on air.
Yeah, well, not just about me and you, but it's about, I was saying, I can't really hear myself, I'm very muffled.
Turn your headphones up.
Anyway, I was saying that as I was driving, whenever I leave here on a Tuesday, I go to the lovely Good Shed and get a little bit of fish from Shane.
Do you?
Shane, the fishmonger.
Oh, right. So that's to take home. You don't go and eat there.
I don't go and eat a raw hake.
Because when you leave here and you finish eating the biscuits and you walk to your car and you eat your pickled egg and tomato.
You saw me doing that.
Yeah. Before you go to the Good Shed for a little bit of fish.
Yeah. You see, if I don't eat my little boiled egg and my tomato and my little jam jar, which you saw me doing in my car the other day, then I would go to the Good Shed and eat even more, you know. But anyway, as I was leaving, I had a little bit of raw hake in my boot, as you do.
As you do, yeah.
From Shane the fishmonger. And there were these blimmin' electric scooters on the St Dunstan's Road, which, as you know, it's coming up to the railway line.
Yeah, it's a bit lumpy up there as well.
It's very lumpy, yeah, lots of potholes. But they were, and you've got lots of parked cars, and you've got zebras, and you've got little mini roundabouts. And they were two studenty types, and a lady and a man. And they were wobbling all over the road and not and moving out from parked cars, not looking over their shoulder, just merrily moving out. And I got so irate, I actually wanted to knock them off. And
did
I had
you?
To check myself.
You had road rage.
I know. I had to check myself because, well, I probably only just had a little boiled egg, so I was probably a bit low blood sugar. But I was irate, Paul Andrews, because I thought, if I knock you off, it's my fault.
Yep.
But they were all over the place, and it really
I nearly ran over an e-scooter the other day. There was no one on it. But,
had you knocked them off previously, then?
No. I was parked. I was going to work at Fruitworks, and I was parked in the world's most expensive council car park. Thank you, Canterbury Council.
Yeah.
£18 a day.
Yeah.
Castle Row car park.
Yeah.
And I had the last space that was free on the end, and next to me is where they park the e-scooters, you know, for like however it works. I don't know how it works, but they're the council e-scooters.
Yeah.
And when I came to back out, I don't know what made me stop and look, but lucky I did, because one of them had fallen over or been knocked over, and its handlebars were laying under my car. Yeah.
Which would have buckled your wheel, presumably.
It would have done a lot of damage to my wheel. It wouldn't have been very healthy for the e-scooter either,
no,
to be honest.
There have been a lot of pictures of them discarded, and, you know, for elderly and for blind people and people. Yeah. Do you say blind people anymore? Do you say people with eye things? I don't know. There's probably some PC. PC word.
Yeah. Visual issues.
Yeah. Do you know what I did? I'm in a very bad mood today, actually.
Oh, good grief.
Well, because, you know, I always make myself a freshly ground, not any coffee, just a lovely freshly ground, freshly roasted coffee with my freshly roasted beans from the coffee bean shop people.
Yep.
So I made that this morning. Already, I frothed up my little coconut milk.
You frothed it? Oh, yeah. Coconut milk. It's disgusting.
Frothed up my coconut milk.
How can you drink that stuff?
Well, I've just trained myself. Mm. And then I put on a nice bit of cacao, organic cacao, sprinkled on top in a lovely heart shape.
Have you ever had coconut milk, Simon?
I can't say I have, Paul.
No, don't. Stay away from it, mate. It's horrible. It's like drinking a melted bounty bar. It really is.
My homeopath, Mohammed, who I see for my vaccine damage and have been since September, he's lovely, Mohammed Kafour.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's listening.
Yeah.
He can actually tell when I've eaten dairy from his. He's got this really spooky machine.
Yeah, well, that's fine.
I'm not supposed to have dairy. I know. I can't drink black tea.
Lots of people have dairy problems, but you don't fix it by putting coconut in your coffee. You just
I can't have it black, and I have tried. I've tried. Look, I've got black tea here.
Yeah, why can't you have black coffee?
Because for me,
coffee's supposed to be black anyway. You're never supposed to have put milk in it in the first place.
It's about the frothy experience. It's about the coffee and the frothy.
Espresso.
Espresso.
Espresso. What's the matter with
you? Do I look Italian?
No.
You know what? I went to a Shepherd Neem. I was just going to finish that coffee thing.
Yeah.
So as I sailed out this morning, I've got my diffuser, Simon, behind you. We've got our lovely guest, Simon.
Lovely.
We've got the lovely Simon Hammond of Morpheus Insurance, but you'll find him on the Twitter as Morpheus.
Twitius Morpheus.
Insurious. You'll find him on the Twitter, MORPHEAS.
US.
Yeah. Morpheus Insurance. Because he couldn't fit the he couldn't fit the unts on. Apparently.
Oh, we run out of characters.
Yeah, that's annoying, that Twitter thing. But so Simon's sitting there with my diffuser, look.
Yeah, it's green at the moment.
It's lovely.
I'll tell you what it looks like at the moment, and then we smash them all to bits. It looks like the smash advert Alien.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I've got in there this week, you've got a real treat, Simon. Not only does it change colour, but I've got
some puffing stuff out the top.
Yeah. I've got some beautiful essential oils, which are for, to protect us from you know what, beginning with C.
All right.
And also
cauliflower. Anti-cauliflower.
Yeah, and also I've got some Dew, D-E-W, which is an air...
Oh, I like Mountain Dew.
It's a natural... I live with a Dew.
No, Mountain Dew.
You say Dew.
It's a soda.
Is it?
Yeah. Very popular in the US.
Has it got sugar in it?
Well, of course it has, yeah. But Mountain Dew is very popular in the US.
A bit like
Dr. Pepper.
I feel we're going off on a tangent here from my coffee.
Are.
So what happened with my coffee, Simon, as you asked? I don't know how I got from coffee onto that. I know how. Because I had that by the door, and we've got a rescue greyhound who tends to, if you put things on the floor, she gets them and eats them and chews them, and she'll go in a handbag.
Apart from the coconut milk, because you can't stand coconut milk.
So I had my flask on the floor, because I'll forget it otherwise, I would put it anywhere else, and by my car keys, everything was there. And then I sailed out because I had to carry that, and then I've got all my Dew and my air sanitizer and all this stuff. It's lovely. It's all natural, Simon.
It's a can of water that they sold her for 12 quid.
It's safe to breathe. It's fragrance free and it's hypoallergenic, and it's leaves the air in your radio studio fresh, clean and germ free. And it's also...
It's water.
It's 95% effective at killing bacteria, fungi, viruses and spores.
Is it?
Hopefully you haven't got any fungi in your pocket.
A fungi spore.
Any mushrooms.
Yeah.
But anyway, so while I was trying to bundle all that in my car, and I left my coffee behind. So I've just texted my new husband, who has it black, like Paul Andrews, but he said he's having it and it's lovely.
Yes. You didn't leave it on the roof of the car, then?
No, I haven't.
Like you normally
before.
Do. Yeah.
I've done that with fish and chips before and a pair of trainers.
Yeah.
Have you ever done that?
I don't think I have. I've seen lots of memes about people
driving off.
Waving at people in cars and waving at them and then giving them the finger and going, oh, well, if you don't want your purse, you don't want your purse.
Yeah,
or you
very easy. If our bunker listeners are listening and that's happened to you, do tweet us in. Use the BBunker hashtag. We'd love to hear how you're doing work-wise, business-wise, whether you're back in the office or are you still WF, work from home,
WFH, work from home.
If you're still work from home, and we'd love to hear from you. But if you have had an experience where you've sailed off and left your fish and chips or your trainers or your purse.
Or anything, indeed.
Yeah, if you're American, of course, purse is handbag, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which I always find very confusing. And I heard someone the other day saying they had their pants on and they were English, but they were trying to be American, weren't they? Because they can't have been walking about in their pants.
I don't know.
I think they were being American.
Well, it all depends in what context you were talking to them, really.
Well, I don't know. It was on Twitter. They said that... It could be anything.
Radio. If you're talking to someone on Twitter, it could be anything, couldn't it?
And even worse, there was an editor. I read a little magazine the other day in Whitstable, and it's a new magazine. It's a freebie. And she wrote Gotten. I get very uppity. I don't know about you, Simon, but that's not right, is it, Gotten?
Technically, it's a Middle English name.
Yeah.
It's very Netflix, isn't it?
It's very Pilgrim Fathers.
Is it?
Yeah.
So it did come over to America from us, but we stopped using it years ago.
Yeah. No, and apparently they say Tooken as well. They can say Tooken.
Well, it's like, Simon's actually very, very right.
It's very clever, isn't it?
No, but it's like the term fool, which the Americans use for autumn, is actually an English word.
Is it?
And it was a Shakespearean word for autumn. And somewhere down the line, we stopped using it in this country. But as Simon quite rightly says, the Pilgrim's Fathers lost contact with us and carried on using the old jargon. And now we think it's all Americanisms.
Yeah, well,
We've gotten...
we've gotten in a muddle.
Yeah.
With our pants down.
Exactly, yeah.
I've had a message...
Too much time over that.
I've had a message from producer Mikey.
Have you?
Yeah.
What's it say?
Guess what he says. He says, we're sounding great on Alexa.
Cool. Yeah, yeah. Well, you can now get Channel Radio on Alexa.
Yeah.
You have to enable the skill on your Alexa, enable Channel Radio as a skill, and then you can say either play Channel Radio or start Channel Radio, and you can hear us on Alexa.
I didn't have a practice this morning. I meant to, but I was too busy, you know, whisking my coffee and making my coffee beans and grinding.
16% of all... UK radio listening is to internet radio via smart speakers.
I'm absolutely sure. So when you say enable, because that was all a bit technical for me at 9 o'clock this morning, do you actually go online and enable it, or can you talk to it and enable it?
Well, we had a bit... When we were doing it at home last night, the
you
instructions...
You got Amanda to do it, didn't you?
Yeah, I can't do
it. You just lay on a chaise longue.
Amanda, give it the instructions.
You lay there just eating sausages.
Yeah. Just give me another sausage and then just make that happen.
Yeah.
With the instructions that Mikey gave us, our Alexa just wouldn't do it. It just wouldn't do it. She eventually went into the app and enabled the skill in the app. She enabled Channel Radio as a skill.
That's what I thought, yeah.
And then when we said play Channel Radio, it played some nonsense. And we experimented, and eventually it played it when we said start Channel Radio. So once we'd enabled the skill, you just go start Channel Radio, and then she'll play Channel Radio.
Well, that's great.
And when you finish, when you say shut up, Alexa, it says you've been listening to Channel Radio.
Well, that's really, really good.
Yes.
She's quite annoying, Alexa, because...
I thought you were going to say Amanda. No, I was going to agree.
Amanda's lovely.
Yes, she is lovely.
Yeah, I expect she won't be doing a hoof all now, will she? She'll be doing events things at Leeds Castle, won't she, now?
Yeah, but she's listening to the show. I'll get her a message any minute for being rude to her.
Yeah, well, you haven't been rude to her. You've been lovely. She did everything, and you ate a sausage on the chaise
lounge. Yeah.
She wouldn't allow you to eat a sausage unless it was low fat anyway. Would she? But, as I was saying, I say to Alexa... Alexa, shuffle my music, right? And she says, I'm sorry, I can't shuffle your music, or something like that. And then I go, play my music, and she says, shuffling your music.
Yeah.
She's really annoying.
She's weird.
She's really annoying.
Weird, yeah.
Anyway, what's happening in the business world? Any? I was wondering if there are any grants for what's happening with people's...
Leave it out.
No, people's...
Sorry.
You're being EastEnders, are you?
Yeah. Not worth it, you know.
No, I haven't watched it since Den and Ange.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I can't comment on whether you're grant or not. But
talking about...
I'll get on to it in a minute, Simon.
Yeah, no, talking about that, I saw a meme the other day, which very tangentially connected to that.
Yeah.
Anita Dobson, who played Angie Watts.
Yeah, she's amazing. She's married to Brian May.
She was married to Brian May. And I saw this...
Same hairstyle.
No, I saw somebody... This was brilliant. This was brilliant, right? Somebody said... It was an argument that you get on Twitter about, I can't remember what it was, COVID or something.
And you love an argument.
No. I wasn't involved. I was just reading it. And this bloke's response was absolutely brilliant. It said, somebody said, trouble with you is you don't follow the science. And he went, oh no, I do follow the science. He said, back in 78, astrophysicist Brian May convinced us that it was fat bottom women that made the world go round. And seeing as no one has overturned that statement, it must be true.
I love it.
I just thought that was brilliant.
I love the fact that they both have the same hairstyle, though.
Exactly. You know,
they are lovely. And they say opposites. They say that you're attracted to people that look like you. Although when you and Amanda got together, I can't really see that happening.
She's much better looking than
me. Yeah, well, anyone.
Really. Everyone's much better. Yeah, thank you for that. Yeah.
Anyway, what I was trying to get through to you before you started off on Grant and EastEnders and things, and, you know, Twitter rants, is are there any grants available for these, you know, utility bill rises of which are net zero?
No, don't even go there. I mean, the government have pulled a real stump with that, haven't they? You know, you can have 200 quid as long as you pay us back. Really? that's just outrageous. I'm not even going to talk about that. No, there isn't any grants for outrageously priced gas and electric. You want to ask me a question? I've been waving this at you for 20 minutes.
What? That?
You can't even see it, can you?
Tenterden, well, I'm having to squint. Tenterden District something. Go, should I hold it up again?
No, no.
No, I want to test my
eyes. At the start of every show, you ask me the same question, and you haven't asked me this week.
Well,
it's 20 past one, and you've been ranting on about coffee and EastEnders.
What time's Simon on?
And Simon's not even going to get on. He's not. We're not going to get round to him,
what,
I'm afraid.
I'll tell you what, I could put anything in that diffuser by him, and he's going to be zonked out. In
he's asleep. Yeah.
Can you smell it now?
Okay.
I've got some lovely essential defence oils.
I can smell it too.
Oh, can you? Yeah, I can. Yeah. Well, it's better than it normally smells. It normally smells of old armpits and old biscuits in here, you know, because there's no window. Who might our sponsor be?
Oh, blimey. Thank you for asking. The Business Bunker Show is pleased to partner with the Tenterden and District Chamber of Commerce. The Chamber encourages membership of businesses in the area covered by Tenterden and its surroundings, including the villages of Appledore, Benenden, Bethersden, Biddenden, Ebony, Newenden, Rovenden, Sandhurst, Smarden, Sissinghurst, Stone, Wittersham and Woodchurch. The Tenterden and District Chamber of Commerce exists to promote the sustainable economic development of this area and to provide a collective voice for the area's businesses. If you'd like to find out more about the Chamber, it's www.tentertonchamber.org.
Very beautifully read.
Thank you.
Did you know, Paul Andrews, that street traders have been left in limbo?
Oh, I saw that.
And fearing for their livelihoods after being told there is no guarantee they will have a pitch next year. Now, where is this, I hear you ask? A review of... They've been trying to do this for a while, Canterbury City Council. It's a review of high street stalls and wagons. Never seen a wagon there, have you?
Well, yeah, there's the burger and sausage wagon in High Street.
Oh, is that a wagon? I thought it was a truck. Or a lorry. Wagons across Canterbury City Centre is currently underway and could see many operators denied new permits after December. It comes as part of a wider review of market and street trading in Canterbury following a controversial decision to revamp St George's Street. So the £1 million makeover due to start early next year will spell the end of the city's market and leave stallholders with no place to set up. I'm feeling furious already, can you tell? Mm. And it's now been revealed that street traders elsewhere in the city centre selling everything from pancakes and hot dogs to bobble hats and phone cases could also be at risk. The council is not issuing any trading permits beyond December during the review, with current operators given no guarantee they will have a pitch after Christmas 2023. I'm seething, Paul Andrews. I love those little street traders. There's the plant man. He's got the most amazing plants and things.
I'm going to get Ben on this show again soon because I want to work with him.
Hasn't he blocked you, though?
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure he has.
Yeah, probably.
Because we had that fight with him about the parking.
Yeah, I know. Ben is the leader of Canterbury City Council, and I want to work with him because they're getting very anti-business over there.
It's just crazy.
It's nonsense.
And, you know, we lost our street market in Whitstable, where I live, Simon, and we had for 18 years, every Thursday we'd go and get our eggs, our flowers, everything from this lovely market, and they got rid of that. Mm. And it's really, really sad. I love these markets. And actually, if you go to Canterbury now, there's not much there. It's eateries, it's coffee shops. Even the hairdressers can't really survive there. It's too expensive.
Nail bars, tattoo parlours.
Yeah. But we've lost, like, Monsoon.
Yeah.
You know, I used to go there. I bought two coats online. Did I tell you this last week?
Yeah.
Shut me up if you did. And I tried them both on. We did, didn't we?
Yeah, you talked about it for an hour last week.
I could have just gone into Monsoon and tried them on.
Yeah.
But no, I've had to go and post them. It takes forever.
I'm getting seriously worried about Canterbury. I really am. And what they're doing. They're just so anti-business.
Why do they want to get rid of the street market?
Well, allegedly. Well, they haven't. To be fair, they haven't said it is going. They've said it's up for review and they're not renewing the licences.
Well, we know what that means.
Yeah,
it's going.
But the problem with politicians is they never think. And Ben should know this. He runs a business in Canterbury, for crying out loud. The problem with politicians is they make these knee-jerk edicts without realising that, as a business, you have to adjust to them, yeah? So when you tell someone, we're not sure if we're going to renew your licence or not, that leaves a business in a quandary that says, well, what do I do? Do I stick here and hope you do? Or do I find somewhere else to go? Or do I stop buying sausages in bulk? You know, what do I do? And we've had this argument all the way through the pandemic where they kept stopping and starting hospitality. And the whole hospitality industry said, look, either stop or start, but don't keep messing about, because that's the worst option of all.
Yeah.
You know, because we don't know whether to stock up or not, and we don't know whether to rehire or not, and that's the problem. But as far as the street licenses are concerned, there's another one of their grandiose plans to redevelop St George's Street in Canterbury, which is currently where the market is.
Yeah.
And that means all the market stalls have got to go.
But what does redeveloping mean?
Oh, they're going to paint lines on the road or something. I don't know. Because they're doing this one-way system through Windcheap as well, and it's just bonkers. It's just bonkers. Yeah.
I can't see how that's going to work.
It's not going to work. It's just bonkers, isn't it? It's just bonkers.
You wonder whether they actually sit in the traffic or drive anywhere.
Well, this is the you know, this is what bothers me about politicians. They get into a little eco bubble where they look at plans and go, "Oh, we could do this," and they stop thinking about the real world and how things happen in the real world. Anyway, St George's Street market is being closed. So what they're saying is they're reviewing all of the street trading licenses that they've got. You know what they'll do? They'll come back and award some more at double the price. That's what
exactly.
They'll do. Yeah,
exactly. Well, their Christmas market, I got a few things from them, but there were traders from, you know, Dorset, and it wasn't very Kentish, I didn't find.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, Ben admitted to me just before when we were having that spat on
Twitter.
When
he was talking to you.
When he was still talking to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. He admitted that the council's broke, and the reason that they've ramped the car parking prices through the roof is it's their only form of income.
But if they would trot along to where I live on the seafront and just give out some tickets, they could make some money, because people park all over the double yellows, all over the pavements, but they don't. But you know, they were trying to build the beach huts opposite
I saw
us.
That got stopped, didn't it? Was that you and your mob?
Yeah, me it and was, my mob, 100. I was quoted in the paper, as was my new husband. But it's ridiculous. They see a little bit of grass, and we'll build on it, you know. And they should be wilding it. They should be allowing, you know, fauna and butterflies and things.
Right. Shall we start the show?
Yeah, let's. that street traders thing, I'm going to take a picture of it and tweet them.
Okay. Zessie Social Media say, as it's Safer Internet Day, we wanted to share some tips with parents and guardians for your children. These come from our Soul Safety resources. If anyone would like a poster, and they've got a picture of a poster here, which is how to be safe on the internet for kids, do get in touch and they'll send you a free poster. Zessie Social Media is their Twitter handle. Do get in touch with them. We've had iTrust Assurance have asked for a shout out. iTrust Assurance are an organisation that help whistleblowers, and they've got an app called Speak Out, which is superb. Not only does it help with whistleblowing, but it helps with the whole employee communication issue. It's certainly worth a look. So do give them a follow on Twitter. iTrust Assure is their Twitter handle. Neville Gaunt. He would like a shout out for. Hold on, I've lost it. Sorry, Neville. First of all, he's pointing me at a young chap called Quajo. And Quajo is a young man taking mould, mice, rats, cockroaches.
Nice.
And infested housing problems, and taking them to the landlords to get them resolved. You can follow Quajo on Twitter. He's Twitter handle is Quajo, Kwajo Housing, Quajo Housing. Give him a follow. Dragon Co-working say good afternoon to the team at Business Bunker. Good afternoon, all you folks over there. That's Roland Stanley and the crew. Chips and Dink say it's Tuesday already and we're listening to the Business Bunker show.
Did you see their wheelie thing?
I'm just about to read it.
Tell me.
Yeah.
I'm very interested.
Hi, Paul. Could we ask to be considered for a shout-out? Of course you can have a shout-out. For our alloy wheel protection service, it stops curbing and damage to the rims of alloys. Blimey.
How does that work?
I don't know, but I need it. I need it big time. Yeah. It says it's great for leased cars and for people's pride and joy. I know what you mean. And they say we can repair the wheels first if needed. Yes, you do. So I'm really interested in this. Anyway, Chips and Dinks, you can find out by giving them a call if you want, 07802 323 617, or follow them on the Twitter, Chips and Dinks. I'm going to find out about that because that looks really fascinating. Apparently, they have got a video of how it works. Now, I was going to read Neville's tweet, but I can't find it now. But
I'll read something while you look. So,
yeah, go on.
And then you won't panic.
Yeah.
So construction of Kent's first zero emission bus service starts this month. Fast Track will connect Whitfield to Dover Priory railway station and the town centre. And the work is expected to take about 18 months. Construction of the rapid bus service includes a new bus, a cycle and pedestrian only bridge across the A2 at Whitfield and a new link road from the B&Q roundabout in Whitfield to Dover Road at Guston. The junction with Dover Road will be for buses, cycles and pedestrians, and with the project focused on carbon reduction, the contractors will plant more than 10,000 trees, shrubs and hedgerows and provide enhanced wildlife habitat in their area. So zero emission bus service, does that mean that the fuel they use is
electric?
Cooking oil?
It's electric.
Oh, is it? Well, how do That's I know? Said. How would I know?
Because it says that at the beginning of the...
No, it says zero emission.
Right at the top.
That could be cooking oil.
Right at the top.
Construction of Kent's first zero emission.
Oh, right.
But it could be cooking oil, couldn't
it? Well, it's not. It's electric. They're electric vehicles.
Well, I want to know, the batteries apparently are not zero emission, are they?
Well, of course not.
Batteries cause a lot of...
Volvo did a big report that everybody tried to bury that said that... electric vehicles are not remotely eco-friendly until they've been in use 7 years or 8 years, and then it starts to cut in. And then you've got the problem of, and the batteries only last 9 years, and you've got the problems of disposing of the batteries. I found Neville's tweet. Could I have a shout out, please, for startups, budding entrepreneurs, teachers and students? It's an e-book that's free to download. It's called Everything You Should Have Learned at School But Didn't. And you can, it's got its own Twitter handle, which is the initials of that, which is EYSHLASBD. Everything You Should Have Learned at School But Didn't. Do download it and check it out. I downloaded the book to read it, but I made a schoolboy error. I downloaded it to my phone. And do you think I can find it on there now? I cannot.
Download it again.
Right, anyway, yes, I'll download it to a desktop. I'm going to play some cheesy tunage.
Which I'm not going to guess. So
you're not, you're not, well, you could try, but...
Somebody playing a guitar. Back another one of those black rocking beats. Back another one of those black rocking beats. Some rap people.
It's the Chemical Brothers.
Oh.
And it's called Lock...
Oh,
rocking blues.
That's so clever.
Just see what I did there.
Did Amanda sit up all night thinking
No,
about
it? I googled it this morning.
While you ate your sausage.
I googled it this morning. We'll be right back. blimey. That was a bit raucous, wasn't it? Chemical Brothers.
It was a bit loud, wasn't it?
It was a bit, wasn't it? Chemical Brothers.
Yeah, I don't know how you thought of that one.
Anyway, well, that was my cheesy tunage. Lock, rocking, what was it, blues or beats.
Yeah, I don't think I know anything by the Chemical Brothers.
Yeah, we do now. Lock, rocking, beats.
I had to eat my plantain chips.
Yeah, there you go. Simon's been introducing us to pizza bites from Marks and Spencer's that look quite interesting as well.
Chili ones or red pepper. Anything with chili or pepper is addictive.
Yep. Anyway, in line with our cheesy tunage, which was a bit raucous, the not-so-raucous Pam Locke joined me for a Zoom conversation. So why don't we hear what Pam had to say?
I'd love to.
It's an absolute pleasure to welcome back onto the Business Bunker Show for the first time in 2022, Pam Locke. Pam is the founder and chief executive of Locke Associates, the HR and employment law specialists, and they're also well-being and mental health counsellors. Pam, good afternoon. Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show. It's a pleasure to see you.
Oh, hi, Paul. Thanks for having me.
It's always a pleasure, and you always provide us with lots of interesting information. If I may, I'd like to kick off by asking you kind of what are the emerging trends in employment law and HR? You know, we've just been through a couple of years of real weird stuff happening. Yeah. And I'm sure that must have had some kind of effect.
Well, you know, it's funny because I was talking about that last night to, I was out doing a networking event, and one of the things that I think has definitely changed is people are much quicker to make formal complaints and using grievance processes.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of pent up anger, angst, anxiety that is then coming out in these sort of grievances that are getting put in. Mm. And of course, for employers, they've got to be very careful because you can't just dismiss the grievances. But equally, if it's something trivial, then you might be able to get it resolved relatively easily and you don't need to go through some formal grievance process. So it's looking at it, determining whether what you need to do with it and making sure that you don't dismiss it too quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I, on the other side of the coin, and I think you're absolutely right, and I think you're right about a lot of people being angry about everything that's happened and stuff. On the other side of the coin, you've also got people that think they're barrack room, what we used to call barrack room lawyers, that go, you know, I'm going to institute the Nuremberg Code. You can't tell me to do that. I know my rights. And quite often they don't know their rights at all.
You're absolutely right. And I mean, what's sort of fueled this as well is obviously there's a lot of free information out there online.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people that are now also putting things out on social media and people talk to them about it. And the assumption is that because somebody's replied to a message, they must know what they're talking about. And of course, that's not true either.
Yeah.
So you do get people that do their analysis of the law and form a view that's incorrect, or listen to somebody else who maybe goads them on, and actually that's not the right thing. So I think, it's difficult because I think, you know, employees then sound like they know what they're talking about. Yeah. And I think it's really important that you make sure that your staff have got the skill set to be able to deal with it, rather than sort of getting panicking when somebody starts quoting all this legislation or saying, this is what the ACAS code says, this is what it should be entitled to. Yeah. And so we've run this Nipping in the Bud training course, which is designed to try and give your managers and supervisors the confidence to be able to handle those conversations and not to dive in and start responding. Because actually, sometimes you do need to stand back and get advice and think, what should I be saying in these circumstances?
Absolutely. And based on what I just said, of course, you have exactly the same from the other side of the coin. You know, a lot of small business owners think they know, you know. It still staggers me in a slightly different context. Yeah, you know that I own Jobs in Kent. Mm-hmm. We still, okay, not many, but we still get occasionally adverts that you just go, I'm not publishing that. You can't say that. And you ring them up and you go, I'm sorry, you can't do that. Why? Really? Where, you know, have you been living in a cave for the last 20 years? You know, really?
It's true. And it's such a minefield now. Yeah. You know, people are much more open to challenging it. They're much less willing. There isn't a stigma is attached to making claims and, you know, that used to be attached in the same way before. So, I mean, I think, you know, we've got quite a lot of clients that have realised that actually, if they've got a retainer with us, they can just pick up the phone and check in on it. But it's actually knowing what to check in on and having that savvy ability. Sometimes it's just common sense, but I think it's also sometimes it is actually a really complex area now, and you need some expert advice to just make sure you're in the right direction and not doing anything to expose yourself, so to speak.
Absolutely. And what I loved is you just made reference to the nipping it in the bud, I think you called it, workshop that you do. I think that's incredibly important because, you know, a supervisor or a middle manager can be suddenly faced with something and they react there and then. You know, they'll go, don't be stupid, or, you know, you can't do that, or go home, or whatever. You know, whatever way they instantly react could make the problem far worse.
Absolutely. And yeah, we have seen that, you know, and it's not through any malice. It's just a reaction. But actually, then somebody will say, well, you're not taking me seriously. And then they'll put in a formal grievance. And then you've got to go through an investigation because it's probably taken on arms and legs. And then, you know, you've got to then potentially look at whether you've got to retrain your manager or whether you've got to then look at potentially the relationship, you know, having to go through a mediation to try and get it back on track again, or an exit. So it's all... it's trying to avoid that, because it's another emerging trend that we're seeing at the moment is the challenges in trying to retain your staff, because there's lots of headhunters and agents trying to find staff because it's so difficult to recruit quality people at the moment.
It's really difficult to recruit anyone.
I was going to say, you'll be able to talk about that at length. But it's finding anybody, but you don't just want anybody, you want good people. So
exactly,
you've got to hang on to your best staff. And, you know, so what we're seeing is we're seeing a lot of clients doing benchmarking where we're sort of looking at their salaries and packages, looking at what additional benefits they could provide. I mean, I think there's one simple thing that actually does make a massive difference to most people, doesn't cost a penny, and that is making sure you say thank you, great job, well done, making sure you praise people. And then you can look at other things like training and development, which is always welcomed. And also looking at your values that you've got as a business, your culture. Do you appeal to other employees? So, you know, do your employees want to be working here? And do you live by your values? So there's lots of things you can look at in your business that doesn't cost a lot of money, but actually can make a big difference in terms of trying to recruit or retain your staff.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And like you say, if you build that kind of relationship with people, when they do have a problem, they're more inclined to not be as aggressive about it because they will expect you to help them resolve it, which is as it should be, you know. As far as I'm concerned, if somebody comes at you with a problem, you don't react at all. You listen. You go, you know, tell me what you think your problem is. Okay, well, we'll investigate, or, you know, we'll do something about that. We'll look into it. Absolutely. No, I love it. And without being funny, I mean, one of the things I like about Lock Associates is you do have these programs that are really beneficial, I think, for small employers, and medium-sized businesses especially, to get an insight into these kind of things, because most people that run small businesses are certainly not HR experts, and they're probably not even managers, if you see what I mean. Most of them are, you know, if they run a plumbing business, they're normally a plumber, or if they run a florist, they're normally a florist, you know. And in trying to run a business and employ staff, it's one of the things that most small businesses really hate because they don't know how to deal with it.
Yeah. And I mean, the reality is that most people get promoted because they're good at what they do.
Yeah,
they don't necessarily get promoted because they're a great manager, because they don't know they're a great manager until they become a manager. And quite often, employers don't invest in training the staff on, to be honest, pretty basic management skills. And you could save a lot of money in the long run from it. Because you give them the toolkit to be able to then be able to deal with situations, diffuse them, as you say. You know, somebody comes with a problem, what do you do with, how do you deal with it, you know, and how do you then handle it, and a lot less stress as a result as well.
Many years ago, or probably 40 years ago, when I had a corporate job, I wrote a paper once that said, stop using management as a reward and use it as a function. And basically saying, you know, I ran IT, and I said, we've got senior IT people that are paid a huge amount of money, and you keep making them managers to pay them the salaries. But why would you do that? Why can't an IT person earn more than these line manager? What stops that? They're different skill sets. Why not employ someone for skill? Do away with the word manager altogether. you know, and employ someone who's good at organizing people, and then, you know, employ someone that's good at fixing computers. It's, anyway.
Completely agree.
It's not going to happen anytime soon, though. And we just have to work our way through it, which is why we have people like you guys to help us do it.
Absolutely, absolutely.
No,
I was just going to say, one of the other things that I think is something that's going to emerge, or is an emerging trend, is quite a lot of the blurring of the lines between work and home life. And I think, obviously, that's been driven quite a bit by COVID, but also things like, you know, we use our social, you know, we use our devices, our personal devices, a lot more for work purposes.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's been a massive increase in the use of WhatsApp. Yeah. So even if you use a personal device, it's probably got your WhatsApp account on it because it's a personal account, and you're still then maybe getting work emails or messages rather coming through on that. So that's a big issue, I think, is how do you deal with that going forward?
Yeah, I that's a really good point, and I want to incorporate that in something I'd like to ask you about. And I'll kind of just throw this at you if you don't want to if you don't want to talk about it, that's fine. But there's been a big push amongst a lot of organisations just recently for a 4-day working week.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you look at it and who, you know, they run polls. Who would like a 4-day working week? I mean, you know, you might as well run a poll that said who would like some free money. They're ridiculous. Of course, we'd like to work 4 days and not 5. But of course, there are whole industries that just can't do that. Manufacturing, whatever. Mm-hmm. But there are industries, like hospitality, for instance, that have very heavily focused on this because one of their recruitment problems is the unsocial hours. So they've mm-hmm. looked heavily at 4-day working weeks, mm-hmm. albeit on shift. But my problem with all of this is, exactly as you just said, Pam, is that we're highly connected. We're highly connected, and my customers, I literally get phone calls and emails from people at 11 o'clock at night, mm-hmm. and then they're not emergency calls going, oh, my God, you know, we're on fire or something. They're mm-hmm. people that will call me at 11 o'clock on a Friday night and go, could you tell me what the price of so-and-so is? Really? You know, and that's something that all of us suffer. So it's, you know, this 4-day, I'd like your views, first of all, on the 4-day week movement.
I mean, I think I can see a lot of merit in it because people are working hard, they're working long hours, and sometimes it can work quite well if they've got a 3-day weekend, you know, and I can see the benefit. So, I mean, what we've noticed is there's a lot of people that are sort of looking at whether they can do 4 longer days so that we're not losing out on, you know, reducing down to, obviously, you know, instead of 40 hours, they're sort of doing 30, a lot less. But I think it just, you've got to look at each case on its merit. You've got to look at each sector. I mean, you know, I have considered it for us. But I think the challenge is making sure that you've got the speed. We are very, very quick in responding because we need to be, because a lot of the issues we deal with are highly emotive.
Yeah.
So the client needs responses very quickly. So we've got to make sure that we can deliver. Now we can do that by having a team working on a case. So it's making sure they're all briefed and they know what's going on. They can pick it up. That's quite difficult given the pace at which we work at and the speed at which things can develop.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we might have got an email at 11 o'clock the night before, and if the person's not in the next day, then they've got to make sure it gets forwarded on to somebody else. So therefore, they've got to be accessing their emails out of hours or on the day they're off. So we would have to work some sort of rota. So I'm not saying it's not workable, but it would be quite challenging to do.
Yeah.
And interestingly, I've not got any feedback from the staff to say, we'd really like to do this because we think we can make it work. Yes, they'd like to do it for the reason you said at the beginning, because everybody would quite fancy a 4-day week. So I haven't ruled it out. I just don't think it'd work for us in the sector in which we're working in and the pace of work we have to do. Mm. But I think it's definitely worth embracing it because I think... And also just looking at flexible working arrangements generally and being more flexible, because there's no doubt, and you'll know from your recruitment experience, that there's a range of people that want to work either at home or more flexibly than what they've done in the past. So whether it fits with their childcare responsibilities or looking after dependent adults.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's quite a difficult, it's you've just got to open up your mind to new things as an employer. And one of them maybe will be a 4-day week that could work quite well for everyone.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. This whole issue around flexibility, it is, to my mind, the biggest thing we face in employment. So many people need to work flexibly. But as businesses, we need to be there for our customers. I mean, funny enough, the first job I ever had when I was asked to leave school in 1970 was a four-day week, but it was a 12-hour shift. I did four 12-hour shifts, four days on, four days off. And it shifted so that eventually you worked a four-day 12-hour shift over Friday, Saturday, Sunday and Monday, you know, which was horrible. Right. But the other 3 weeks were fine. You know, there's so many things to try to sort out in this. And I think you're absolutely right, Pam. Each organisation has a unique set of issues that they need to try and deal with this.
Yeah, I mean, I've got the same, you know, I was just thinking about, we don't have a one size fits all. I mean, we've got a lot of people that are working flexibly in the office. You know, we've got HR consultants, we've got lawyers, we've got support staff. You know, some of them are working shorter days, some of them are working two days a week, some are working 3 days, some are working four. It's a huge variety, you know, and I've got to try and make sure that I know what hours they're working so that I allocate work and that, you know, they're not getting too much work because they're obviously not back in.
Yeah.
So, you know, it does mean that you've got hopefully happy staff that are productive.
Yeah.
And you get a flexibility back as well. So, I mean, if I said to one of them, well, in fact, I'm due to be off on holiday, you know, soon, and I said, could you maybe do some extra hours, and they said, yeah, I can do that from home. Fantastic. So it's that give and take as well. You need to build that relationship. You know, when you've got great staff, you want to keep them. It's you being able to be flexible with them as an employer, and then you'll get something back from them as well.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I did in one of my businesses quite a long time ago was actually abandon hours, and I just said, you know. They say, what's the start time? I don't know. What's the finish? I don't know. You know, I don't want to pay you to work 9 to 5. Yeah. I want to pay you to do things.
Yeah.
I don't care if it takes you an hour or 6 hours. Well, I do, but you know, you get the point. If you can do your whole thing in an hour, go home. Well, you know, why not? You've done it. You've done what I wanted you to do. It's done. That can be incredibly difficult to manage because you get into disputes over, well, hold on a minute, you didn't do it properly. You know, you half did it and then went home.
I think it depends again on the job. I mean, obviously that works there. That wouldn't probably work for us because
of course.
Work we do. But you're right. I mean, I think you've got to look at how prescriptive you want to be and whether you need to be so prescriptive about what they do. And there are a lot of employers now looking at changing their approach because they do recognise that parents have got, you know, into the habit of picking their children up, dropping them off, and they actually like it and they want to accommodate it. So what they're saying is, you know, you only have to work a core hours, and outside that, we need, you know, to do the extra hours that you need to do when it suits you.
Yeah.
You know, so you can work in the evenings, you can work at other times. But of course, this then comes back to, you know, the hour, getting an email at 11 o'clock from one of your colleagues because they happen to be working at that time.
Exactly.
You know, does the recipient feel they've got to respond at that time? And that's when you start getting issues then. So you've got to be quite clear with all your staff what your expectations are. So, I mean, I say to staff, if I send you something out of working hours, I'm not expecting you to respond to it. It's just that I've forgotten, I might forget to do it. And I usually mark it. I'll maybe say, you know, not urgent, no need to look until Monday you know, so if people understand I've not got expectations, they have to look at, you know, every email and respond out of hours.
Yeah. And I think that's important, isn't it? And you have to have a culture where they do really trust that as well.
Absolutely.
You know, when I first implemented this, I don't care what hours you work, but all my people turned up at 8 o'clock in the morning to start work. Why are you all here? No, we know what you're up to. No. We're coming in. We're going to make sure we're here. And you go, well, you don't have to be, but you made reference a little bit earlier on, and it's kind of very tied up in all the things we've been talking about, really, which is social media.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to talk a little bit, if we may, Pam, about cyberbullying. Mm-hmm. Cancel culture and pylons and all those kind of things. You know, we see it quite often now. And I, if I'm really honest, I do it myself. I've done it to two organisations this week on Twitter. I've actually posted, "You're rubbish. You know, sort yourselves out. HSBC Bank, you're rubbish." And then that starts a pylon because everybody in the world goes, "Yeah, I have problems with them too." That causes a problem for the social media staff that are running the accounts, But of course, we have got this where it can turn nasty as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, cyberbullying, so we're talking about people using usually messaging services on social platforms to sort of either bully or harass people. So we do come across a huge number of cases involving that nowadays. Mm. And there's different forms, because it's not all necessarily about what you write. It might also just be about isolation. So, yeah, you know, for example, leaving somebody out of a WhatsApp group that's clearly including everybody else in the team, but they're not included.
Yeah.
And then staff are, you know, exchanging messages and jokes or, you know,
yeah,
you know, excluding them. So that exclusion can be a form of bullying as well.
Yeah.
But the more common type is when there's some form of harassment or bullying where there's sort of, you know, an exchange of messages that takes place. And of course, when you use social media, people tend to talk in a more informal manner, which then can lead to issues because they may be making appropriate comments that they wouldn't do in an email.
Yeah.
But then, of course, the other issue that you've got is you've got a record of that. And a lot of people don't appreciate that even though it's on a personal device, if it can be work-related, then it's disclosable in tribunal proceedings. Yeah. So we would be turning around and saying, you know, your text, your WhatsApp messages, you know, we're going to have to disclose those. Mm. And so, you know, I still got clients that are exchanging things between directors that they should not be doing. And they think it's okay because it's on WhatsApp.
Yeah.
And so you've got to do a data detox, make sure you're not doing that, and try also just not to send the messages in the first place.
Sure, absolutely.
And then you've got things like Snapchat, obviously, where the message is sent, then it disappears. So if somebody is getting bullied, it's actually then very difficult to see evidence of that.
Yeah.
So there's lots of different forms it takes, but it is a worrying development. And I think a lot of it comes down to employers trying to manage it.
Yeah.
You know, so if you do allow WhatsApp groups to be set up, then you need to set out sort of some guidelines and a policy to say this is how you should be behaving. So that if it does go wrong, you as an employer are to some extent protected because you tried to prevent it happening in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I belong to various WhatsApp groups, and you get memes posted to the WhatsApp group all the time. Yeah. And you sometimes, I mean, I'm normally a robust kind of person, so I just laugh. But I go, do you know what? You know, there's going to be people here that are going to find that really offensive. And you've just sent it to them in a blanket kind of message. And, you know, they go, ha ha, look at this. And they just don't think about who's received that. You know,
absolutely.
Because one of the other problems with technology, and I want to just finish off, if I may, on technology in general. One of the problems with technology is it's so easy to link everything that you don't even realize you're doing it. You know, I get included in Twitter links, and I'm thinking, what are they going on about? I don't even know what they're talking about. And I've got 5,000 messages with me linked in all of them, and people going, you're an idiot, and you're an idiot, and you're stupid, and all kinds. I don't even know what this argument's about. For me, I've spent 50 years working in IT, and one of the things that scares me more than anything at the moment is IT. and it scares me because government organisations are doing more and more and more in the digital field. And one of the problems is, as organisations, as businesses, we don't manage it with a human face. Yeah. So I've just been through a massive problem with a bank whose computer said no, and trying to get a human to go, actually, that was wrong, we shouldn't have done that, has been almost impossible for 6 months, because everybody just keeps blaming the computer. They go, well, you know, sorry, it was an automated process. Yeah, well, unautomate it and deal with it.
I'm surprised they didn't blame COVID, because that's usually what they come up with.
Yeah, well, the problem they had with that is that they'd already messed it up long before COVID. But they did try. They did. At one stage, they said, oh, the trouble is everyone's working at home. I went, yeah, but your data center's not in your house, is it? but that bothers me, because you can get locked out of something in technology terms. And you made reference earlier to people not being in a WhatsApp group. Mm. Now, sometimes that can happen purely unintentionally. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. You've gone to add a number and you've typed the number wrong or something. And then, not particularly with WhatsApp, but some of these people then won't let you re-add it. Yeah. They go, no, you've already added that once, but it's not there. You know. So my issue with tying everything together and so many technical things from an employment point of view is, where's the human interaction in all of this? How do we cope with dealing with technology gone wrong? Is my big issue.
Well, I think the big thing, and I've said this for the last 25 years I've worked in this area, is communication.
Mm.
And it's about verbal communication. Yes. And making sure you talk to people so that if people have a problem, they flag it up. But that you're honest with staff as well. And you flag things up to them as well and say, look, there's been an issue. We just need to make you aware of this, you know, because people then respect you for that. So I think it's communication is the key word in everything that underpins employment.
Yeah, which is what drives me absolutely bonkers about no reply emails and no reply text messages, because you can't communicate. You can't go, no, actually, you're wrong. Yeah, you've got the
wrong
address.
And to be honest, it's definitely got worse, and it causes a lot of stress and anxiety for people. And I think, you know, if it's happening in your job,
yeah,
and you can't move things on, and your manager's saying, what's happening with this? And you say, well, I've got no reply.
Yeah.
You know, it does become incredibly stressful. So I think it's really important, you know, you flag it up early on if you're hitting problems,
yeah,
so that, you know, your manager can help you and support you.
Yeah, absolutely. Pam, thank you for that. It's really good to catch up with you and to hear your views on all of these things that are affecting all of us as small and medium-sized businesses. Just give us a shout for your website if people want to find out more, because you've got lots of lovely blogs about all of this and you run workshops and all kinds of things. Pam, give us a shout out for your website.
It's www.lockassociates.co.uk.
Fantastic, Pam. Pleasure to see you as always. Enjoy the rest of your day and we'll see you again soon.
Thank you.
That was a fantastic Pam Locke there of Locke Associates, employment law, wellbeing and health. And
nothing worse than a no reply email.
Oh, tell me about it.
Drive
me bonkers.
Yeah.
Right. It's almost time for us to join the newsroom now, but I want to read another tweet that we've got from the lovely Sandra Darawala of Recovery Well. We would love a shout out, please, for Recovery Well. All types of fabulous eco wellbeing products for men and women, ideal for Valentine's, as well as vouchers for massages and reflexology treatments. We're now online for click and collect 24/7. Have a fabulous Business Bunker show. And she sent me a QR code for the shop and everything.
That's really
and
clever.
You can follow Sandra, Darawala Sandra, that's Darawala Sandra, that's Sandra, and Recovery Well, which is, as it is, all one word, Recovery Well. So do check that out. It's fantastic. Have you got anything you need to get in before we get on to the news?
The Marsh Network is on go to www.marshnetwork.co.uk, or you can email for a free ticket, terry@botfield.net. And it's on for the whole of the next one is 17th of February. And the speaker is Martin Searle, the development manager for Sussex.
Fantastic.
For the FSB.
Fantastic. I've had a tweet from Helen at View IT Training. And she says, can we have a Business Bunker shout out, please, at View IT Training for all those who are smashing their Excel on their training course today? So, of course, you can consider yourself shouted out. I think Tracy Ferguson has put a call out for anyone in Kent can recommend a company that specialises in trademark advice for a small business on a budget. So if you know of anybody, please let either me or Tracy know. Tracy's on Twitter at Tazzy, T-A-Z-I-6-4. If you know of anyone that can help with trademark, then please do get in touch. But I think it's time we join the Channel Radio newsroom.
I haven't listened this morning. I need to catch up.
Okie doke. Here we go.
Locke Associates Group. Let us look after all your people needs so you can focus on growing your business. No long-term tie-ins. Just